Hello, and welcome to another interview on GivingCirclesHelp.com, where we're compiling information and interviews from people around the country who are running their own giving circles so that we can learn from each other and continuously improve our ability to make an impact with our giving. Today, I'm speaking with Carolyn Steinhauser, who is a founder of the Women's Giving Circle of York County. I am really excited to speak with Carolyn today. Their Giving Circle is celebrating their 10-year anniversary, and they are doing some really unique things. So, Carolyn, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Would you start by giving us an overview of your Giving Circle?
Our Giving Circle began 10 years ago with several women who were actually involved with the Community Foundation, the York County Community Foundation, and they wanted to, they'd heard about Giving Circles, and so we decided that we'd like to start one. We began with hoping we could recruit half a dozen or a dozen women that would each contribute $1,000 or whatever a year, or a couple thousand dollars a year, and we found that we had dozens of members within a year. Since then, we have grown to about 85 members. Our membership is pretty constant. We may lose four or five during the year and pick up five or ten, something like that. So we're stable. And our purpose is really strategic philanthropy. We are a program of the Community Foundation. The Community Foundation supports us with administrative support and program consulting support, and so that we can focus all our energies on our mission, which is strategic philanthropy. By that, we mean that we are very proactive. We do not fund ongoing operating support. We do not typically, although sometimes we do, solicit proposals generally. Rather, we have three investment priorities that are maintained over the years. We tweak them from time to time. Every 2 years we have a planning retreat. We tweak them. But they've been pretty constant, our three investment priority areas. And our investment principles focus on something that can create real change, that has the leadership in place to do that, that is sustainable when our grant funding is ending, and that is going to have a real impact in the community. Is that an overview?
That was fantastic. So a couple of questions on this. So you mentioned that you have three areas that you focus on, right?
Right.
What are those three areas?
The first is urban revitalization, which includes healthy neighborhoods, and this is called in the city, healthy neighborhoods and a viable and vibrant commercial and cultural district. So it's a very broad, focused on the core of the city. The second one is education, focusing on at-risk youth, typically youth. It could include adults, but typically youth. And the third is encouraging a diverse community of people living in harmony with one another, so diversity. Those are our three investment priorities.
Okay. And have those stayed pretty stable throughout the years?
They've been pretty stable throughout the year. They've been tweaked throughout the years, but they've been pretty stable. They're huge areas, and we're over the years, we've gotten very knowledgeable in those areas, and so we feel like, you know, we get better at our grant making each year because we're really educated in those and continue to educate ourselves in those areas.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I find so interesting about your circle is that you don't solicit any requests. You have
we do occasionally. This is how we go about it.
Okay.
We have membership meetings, just five a year. That's all. Membership luncheons and a program, and any you can join and just come to membership meetings just because you'd like to learn and be stimulated by what you're learning about what's going on in the community. But those people who want to be more active join study groups, and we have study groups in each of those areas. And the study groups are looking for ways to make something happen in those areas. It might be that we say, oh, we've got a real problem with crime in the west end of the city neighborhoods. let's go talk to the police chief. Let's bring in people that are working there and ask them, you know, what they think we can do. And that led to one of our biggest current projects. At other times, we will say, well, this is going to take other partners. We're going to have to go out and convene people. We're going to look for other people to join us in this effort because it's a big undertaking. Other times we might look for models across the country. We're looking now at one in education, looking at research on other turning around inner city schools and how we can, what we can learn from that research, what the study group can learn, and then how we can partner with others to make that happen. In some cases, we will say, you know much better than we know out in the community, groups that are working in a certain area, diversity is one, for example. Let's go talk to the leadership in the African American and Hispanic communities. Let's bring in focus groups, meet with those people, and let them tell us what they think we should be doing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we simply say, let's put out a request for proposals. We might do that every year or two. And say, this is what we're interested in seeing happening. We will entertain grant requests, and then we'll have information meetings to help them understand what we're looking for. And in some cases, we will give them technical assistance. Typically, we often do that, and we build that into our grant making, where we will pay for the technical assistance to help them do what they want to do.
Like, what's an example of technical assistance?
An example of technical assistance would be that we had a lighting project in neighborhoods. They said, we want more lights. It's dangerous. We're afraid to go out at nighttime, and so we want better lighting in our neighborhoods. So we called in from the foundation the energy program consultant who knew all about lighting, and we had information sessions, and the neighborhoods applied for grants. And then once they were approved for a grant, he worked with them to design their lighting, what kind of lighting they would put in their neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So how you're distributing money in your community seems to be varied. And it also seems to change depending on what your study groups are doing. Is that,
right,
is that
fair? Right. That's fair.
Now, is it changing every year, or you mentioned you have planning meetings every two years?
We have a planning retreat where we look at those priorities. We may tweak them a little bit.
Okay.
But this year, we just had a planning retreat in February, our biannual planning retreat, and we didn't tweak them at all. There's so much work to be done in those areas that we maintained them completely as they were. We didn't make any changes whatsoever to them.
Mm-hmm. And then what role do the other 80 women who are members of your Giving Circle play in helping decide where the money goes?
We have very simple operating procedures. We do not have bylaws. We've purposely not had bylaws. We have very simple operating policies, one page. And it says, we don't expect people to have to be active members. We have some members, I would say a third of our membership may come to one meeting a year, or maybe not any. They're in Florida all winter, and they're retired, and so and so. And they simply support us because they believe in what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And other members simply come to membership meetings because they're very interested in learning all this, but they don't want to be actively involved in a study group. And then I would say that a third of our members participate very actively in planning meetings and in study groups. Every member must vote on a grant. That our operating policies say whenever we make a grant, it must be voted upon by the membership. And so at a membership meeting, a vote of the majority of people attending, or they could vote by proxy if they prefer, and that's who approves our grants. They are recommended by the study group, and then they go to our planning committee for endorsement, and then they go to the membership.
Mm-hmm. And is the membership choosing among different options, or are they just saying yay or nay?
They're saying yay or nay, because
okay.
There's been so... A study group may research an issue for nine months. They may be spending 9 months researching a project, and by the time they bring it to the planning committee and then to the membership, it's very well developed.
Mm-hmm. And does it happen often that the membership will say no?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Membership has never said no.
Yeah.
Because, first of all, everyone's invited to participate in a study group. Anyone can participate in a study group. Secondly, we don't have a board. We have what we call a planning committee. We do elect, and our operating policies say, we elect a chairman, and we elect education co-chairs, two people who chair our education program, which is planning our meetings and what we're going to learn at our meetings, and we have a membership co-chairs. And that's all our officers, and myself as the consultant to the group, paid by the foundation to be the consultant for program. And so once a study group makes a recommendation, they make it to the planning committee, which is our informal board. And every member may attend any planning committee meeting and vote.
Mm-hmm.
The regular members are the elected officers. But any, and so we typically have 20, maybe 20 people at a planning committee meeting, and they're scheduled on call. There's probably about four a year. And they're scheduled on call when we have business to be done. And they are our informal board. So everybody can participate to whatever level they wish to participate, but there's no stigma to those people who don't participate at all. They simply support us financially because they believe in what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine by the time it gets to the membership, there's been so much thought and consideration.
And they get a position paper and all that kind of thing in advance so they can ask any questions and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a really amazing structure. And I was hoping you could talk a little bit about the commitment that the Giving Circle has made to supporting the Giving Circle financially and how that might make it possible to do these sort of things.
You mean our membership dues?
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a different membership dues structure. It's a little different than many circles, but purposeful. Our standard membership is called a senior membership, and it's $1,000 a year. And the more than 50% of our members are regular $1,000 senior members. We have a junior membership, which is not age-related, and there is no difference in membership privileges whatsoever. But it's for people who $1,000 is a real stretch. They may be 30-year-old young career women or young married, or they may be elderly on a more fixed income. Whatever their circumstance, they may be women of lesser means that are very active in the community and people that we really want to. We have a very diverse membership. And so there's a $500 membership you may elect to take. And what we see is people that come in at that work toward becoming a senior member, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
We have also a supporting membership and sustaining. Anything over the $1,000, you're a supporting member, and anything over $1,500, you're a sustaining member. So we have, typically, we have some women who are $2,000, $2,500 members, and some of them aren't active at all, but they're typically the woman who believes in what we're doing. They're philanthropists, older women of means, very interested in philanthropy,
mm-hmm.
Are typically the sustaining members. We also have scholarships, which is a little bit different than many giving circles. We're looking for women who are really involved in the community and interested in the things we're interested in, and some of them can't afford a $500 membership. And so our sustaining and supporting membership dues in part pay, they pay for our operating expenses, but they also pay for scholarships.
Mm.
And so if I give $1,500, $500 of that, well, $100 goes toward operations, and then the rest of it can go towards scholarships and grant making. It pays the $500 fee for
mm-hmm.
that person who can only pay $200 or $300.
So people get to participate in the Giving Circle even though they can't themselves do the entire $500.
Yes, and we ask them to commit at least a minimum of $100,
uh-huh.
but they typically contribute more than that
uh-huh.
and work toward becoming a junior member.
Oh, that's so interesting. I haven't heard of any other giving circle doing that. What's important about that to you guys?
It's important to us to have the diversity of membership that we can have that way. I think of, for example, an older woman who's very active. She's probably 85 years old. She was a school teacher, passionate about education and terribly well-informed, involved in the inner city schools. She could not do a $500 membership. She can only put $300 a year toward it. Mm-hmm. She's a very valuable member of study groups and a very important voice to be heard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have several women of color that can't afford the membership. We do not, when I say we're diverse, we're not terribly diverse racially and we're not terribly diverse geographically because we concentrate more on the Metro York community area than the outlying areas. So we don't have a hugely geographically diverse, and we don't have, we probably only have 4 or 5 women of color in the group. We also, the challenge is younger members. That's a real challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're looking for the next generation of leadership in our community. And a woman of 30 years old is so busy mm-hmm. with her family responsibilities, if she has a family, her professional responsibilities are in both, many cases, both her family and professional responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And she simply, you know, can't commit to that level of engagement or that level of financial support in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a constant challenge. We're not really attractive to, I think the typical younger woman is more the 35 to 45 year old.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's typically our younger woman. We mm-hmm. don't have 25 year olds or 30 year olds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the recent project that you did with the Gates, because I think this is a great example of what your giving circle is accomplishing.
We were interested in urban revitalization, as I said, and healthy neighborhoods is a part of that. And this West End area of the city is a high crime area. We had gotten to know them well about 4 years ago through the lighting project. And so we went back to the police chief, the city police chief, and said, tell us what you would like to do. If you had money to do, what would you do to help reduce crime in this area? And he said, I want gates. These are row houses, most of them, and they have alleyways between the houses, and they become a loitering area for drug dealers and an escape route for offenders.
Mm.
And so he said, I would want gates. I want hundreds of gates. They're metal. They're called grocer gates. And to secure these alleyways, to one, keep people from doing those things in the alleyways, and two, to block escape routes when we're pursuing an offender.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, well, we figured that would cost a lot of money. We looked at it and thought it could cost, upward of $500,000 just in that neighborhood. And we were committed to less than $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
And so we said, okay, well, let's try to make that happen. So we convened. We went to a member whose husband has a very large construction company, and he also has a training school to teach people construction. And he agreed to purchase the metal at cost and to fabricate gates in his training school
mm-hmm.
at no cost. And then we had to have them installed. So we went to the Builders Habitat, who formed a partnership, and they said, we want to do this as a community project. We will install under the supervision of the construction guy, whom we will pay. And then we had to have a project manager, because it's a huge project with a lot of moving parts. The community policing would provide all the getting the homeowners, and most of these are rental properties, so it's very hard to locate the homeowners, and they change. It's a high turnover. And they will get all the permissions for the installation, which was a huge project for the community policing.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then we had to have a project manager, so we had to pay for that. We paid for a woman who had worked in that neighborhood, who was a businesswoman, and through another philanthropy, that company had, invested in the community, highly skilled in project management, but knew the neighborhood. So we put the whole team together, and we've installed about 300 gates. It's taken about a year and a half to do this. We allocated $85,000. We partnered with the Community Foundation, who put in 15, and we put in 70. And now I just found out yesterday we have 20,000 left. And now we're going to go back to the police chief tomorrow. And we're having a meeting, and all the partners want to continue. They've committed for another 2 years. And so we want to look at how we can, we now have a template. We have a handbook, a how-to manual that the consultant developed, the project manager. And we want to look at another neighborhood, but we don't want to pay for the whole thing. We want to leverage other funding.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to say, okay, if we put $20,000 and it's a $50,000 or $100,000 project, you know, how can we leverage that to get other partners? We're talking about churches in those areas is one distinct possibility of a couple churches in a neighborhood putting up money. There's a couple corporations in that area that care about safety. So that's the Gates Project.
It's amazing. I like it for so many reasons. One, it expanded what I thought was possible, you know, because it's so big and it has so many different moving parts. The other thing that I really like about it is your willingness to invest in expertise. You know,
yes, technical assistance and expertise is better than money in many cases. It's really, truly more productive and helpful to people, the expertise. And the technical assistance is often more helpful than the dollars.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that costs us money.
And it costs money.
And we pay for that.
Yeah. And that's kind of part of what the Giving Circle dues are paying for. You know, it's
mm-hmm.
we're going to
yes.
do this project, and part of that project requires that we hire good people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's... like I said, outside the scope of what I've seen other giving circles doing, and certainly outside the scope of what I had imagined possible, and I really, really love it. And I love this idea of a giving circle. I think that sometimes or at least my experience has been is, you know, wanting to people to chip in and do their part for free. And that's good, and there's times when that's necessary, but there's also times in which... you need to invest, and investing in people and expertise is part of giving back to the community.
Well, and sometimes I think the delicate balance is we have a very diverse membership in terms of our interests, in terms of where we are in philanthropy. Some of us are brand new at it. Others are highly seasoned, experienced philanthropists.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're very diverse, and we need to have things that are of interest to the whole membership. So we need different kinds of things. Sometimes we need something you can physically see happen, starting a new school, you know, that you can really see it. On the other hand, sometimes we are just a partner in a great big community initiative. We're involved in one right now that's been 3 years of planning. We're in the second year of it, almost near the end of the second year, and it's a $185,000 a year project for 3 years, and we're only investing $5,000 a year. We're one of 20 partners, but we're at the table,
mm-hmm.
and we're learning so much, and we're participating actively, and then as individual philanthropists, some of us are supporting it, and so that's a long term. We won't see the results of that for years, and some of us, we call it patient capital. Some of us understand patient capital, and we want to invest in that. Others, we have to have some immediate results. We have to see gates going up,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
so that people can see their money at work. We can't put it all in long-term projects that are going to take 5 or 10 years to pay off.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Probably our longest-term investment was about 5 or 6 years ago. We had a study group, education for at-risk kids, focusing on the city schools, which are under stress. And so we said, we really want to start an international baccalaureate program, which is a world-class program, to provide a world-class educational opportunity for inner-city kids. We couldn't do it through the existing school system. The leadership simply wasn't there to make it happen. So after 9 months or so of an intense study, meeting with all kinds of people who had them in other communities, learning about the IB program, we put it on the shelf, the research, and said, when the time is ripe, we hope to be able to make this happen. And about 2 years later, a whole community initiative that was looking at integrating suburban and city kids into a truly diverse school population, said, but we need it to be a great educational opportunity for both these kids, both these kids from the city and from the wealthier suburbs. And we said, how about an IB charter school? And so we got our study group people back together. They became part of the group. And last September, a year ago, we opened the first charter school in the state that combines three school districts, two suburban, one inner city, with an international baccalaureate curriculum. And they opened with 225 kids in grades K through 2. And this year, they added a grade. They will add a grade each year. And this year, they have a waiting list of 75 kids for the kindergarten.
That's amazing.
And but it took, the whole thing's been about 6 years till it all happened.
So if a project is you know, kind of taking such a long time to come to fruition, you must have a lot of institutional memory in your giving circle.
We do. Well, and we have the Community Foundation there, and I've been the consultant since it started, and we have probably, 25, 30 of our members were in the first year or two. So we do have institutional memory.
Mm-hmm. That's really amazing. So in each of your three different areas, are you consciously saying, okay, well, we don't have something that we can really touch right now. We need a project that we can touch. Can somebody work on that?
I would say, for example, we haven't had a diversity study group. We didn't have one for 2 years. We were just sort of looking for an opportunity. We thought there was one that was going to happen. We were kind of looking for an opportunity. So we convened that study group. They've been in existence about 5-6 months, and they just made a recommendation for a grant.
Mm.
And we won't convene them maybe for another year, because we're going to be working hard on education and urban revitalization. So we may not have three study groups going at the same time. We will have at least one and typically two study groups going.
And
so we may not make an investment in one of those areas for 2 years.
Okay. And it seems like that's a great place where not having bylaws really gives you that flexibility.
Yes, and some years, I've looked, and some years we might give out $125,000, and the next year we give out $50,000, just because we don't have a project maturing.
Uh-huh.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, we're not saying, oh, we have to give out X dollars a year.
Uh-huh.
We keep a healthy balance there. Right now we have about $200,000. We like to start each year with at least $100,000 in the bank, in addition to what we're going to take in membership dues.
Mm.
So if something big comes along, we could respond to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fascinating. I don't want to keep you much longer, because I know I promised I'd keep the interview about 20 to 30 minutes. But
I love the Women's Giving Circle. I adore talking about it. It's fun. It's really been fun. But I must tell you, we also have some failures, because we're talking about venture capital. And we can have failures. And our members understand that we can have failures. And so, for example, in diversity, we funded a program about 4 years ago, Leadership in Diverse Schools. It was to train teachers and administrators in schools to really understand diversity and implement programs. And we gave a planning grant to the group that was designing this, who were well known for their work in diversity, with Leadership York and the Jewish Community Center. And we gave them, $7,000 or $8,000 for a planning grant. And they came back and said, okay, we know we can do, but it's going to cost $1,500 a year for every teacher and administrator, and they're not going to pay that out of their school budget until they know it's a good program. Will you underwrite the first-year class? Will you underwrite the teachers that join the first-year class? And we said yes, so we gave them $30,000.
Okay.
They're now in their fourth year. All the school districts participate. They have 30-some people in the class. Everybody pays. They've put 150 people through the program, which is terrific. It's been a very successful program. So we went back to them and said, you're the experts in this. this is what you do. You have a big diversity program, and you have on your staff people who are experts in this area. We want to do something in the workplace. We couldn't get a human relations commission, a county human relations commission, past the county commissioners. What could you do? And they said, well, give us a planning grant to see if we can design a workplace program. So we gave them $2,500, $3,000, something for planning time. And they did the research, and they came back and said, it's not going to work. We can't get the interest from the corporate community. Mm-hmm. The people that are doing it support it, but the people that aren't doing it aren't interested. Mm. And so, you know, that's not going anywhere, because we learned from the planning grant that we couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm. So this is an interesting point that you bring up, because failure is not tolerated very much in either, you know, government work and trying to solve social problems, or in philanthropic work. So how are you guys handling failure? Have you just created a culture where you understand that it happens and it's acceptable?
Well, I'll tell you what we've learned over the past 10 years. We've learned to make grants in stages because we don't put big dollars. For example, we wanted to start, really encourage public art in the city, really good public art in the city. And it was part of the Cultural Alliance, which is our United Way of the Arts kind of thing, part of their long-range strategic plan. And so we said, okay, we'll approve up to $30,000 to try to initiate a public arts program in the city, but we will give the Cultural Alliance the first $5,000 to do the research. To do the research, how other committees are funding it, how they're structured, da-da-da-da-da. And we did the research. We brought in all these experts. They brought in people from across the country who are experts in public art in cities like Cincinnati and Cleveland and Boston and that kind of thing. And we found out that we had great ideas and great things to be done, but there was no funding for it. Mm. There were no funders at the table. There were too many other pressing community needs that were, you know, a higher priority than public art in the city. And so we regrouped, because the first grant was only up to $5,000 for the first research phase. So we kept the other $25,000 in a committed pot, but sitting there, and said, let's just wait for an opportunity and see if an opportunity, if not, we'll reallocate the money to something else. So within about 6 months, we found that the International Baccalaureate School needed a playground. And they desperately needed a playground. It's right in the inner city. And we said, this public art expert from Boston who did all these public art playgrounds, which are very creative kinds of learning playgrounds, I wonder if we could use this as a showpiece for the community to show them what public art can mean in a community. And so they got interested. We got interested. We tapped into a fund at the Community Foundation that gave us a $50,000 grant. We had another donor who was involved in the school who put another $25,000 in. That launched it, and we're now working with them on a capital campaign. It's a $400,000 project, and we haven't started the fundraising yet, but we've got 40% of the goal. Mm. And that will be a showcase. And then we've gotten another school in the area interested, and they're doing it as part of this. The Cultural Alliance is putting money into technical assistance. And so we want these two projects to show the community what can be done. So we reallocated the funding to help the IB school with the design work.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of really being flexible and taking some risks, but calculated risks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, hopefully informed risks. But, you know, we'll see what happens in a couple years.
Yeah.
Whether this strategy was working.
Right.
We know we'll have two great playgrounds, but we don't know how much further it'll go.
Oh, and even it's a success at this, from the perspective that you've got two great playgrounds that weren't there before.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. So you took something and did something different with it that may or may not lead to, you know, coming back to the original project.
But we've got one more, if you want to hear about one more, if you have time. We've got one more that the verdict is still very out, and it was the biggest grant we ever made. We said, we want to help develop neighborhood associations in these poor neighborhoods. And we met with all the neighborhood leaders and the Neighborhood Alliance for months and months and months. And it became important that they have technical assistance, that they have to have someone help them learn how to develop a neighborhood association, how to run a neighborhood organization, and that kind of thing. Do strategic plans of what the neighbors agree they want to do and all that kind of thing. So we hired an urban planning expert, and we got a fiscal agent for the project, and we committed $125,000 over 2 years for the project. $100,000 was ours, $25,000 was the Community Foundation, something like that. And we hired this person to teach them these things. And she worked for us for 2 years, and she did some great things. But we want that to be sustainable, so part of the plan was we've got to develop during those 2 years what's going to happen when our funding runs out. Mm-hmm. Well, in the meantime, the city's been in enormous financial crisis, and we haven't been able to get that position in the city budget. We simply haven't been able. So the position ended about 9 months ago, and there's been a lot of neighborhoods which are strengthened, which have neighborhood associations that didn't before. But these are transient neighborhoods. Those people are going to leave.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so to be able to sustain that work without the support of someone helping them and giving them leadership, and we constantly are reviewing where are the opportunities to fund that position.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, right now we don't know where they are. We have some ideas, but we certainly have no one champing at the bit to fund that position.
Mm-hmm. Is that something the Giving Circle might take on as?
No, we would not fund an operating program.
Okay.
You know,
gotcha.
That's not part of it. So we would not fund that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what you've set up is, you know, the type of how you give out money. You don't do it for ongoing support costs.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. But you might look for a partner who would be willing to do that sort of thing.
Well, we would not put a lot more money into it. We would really try to identify leadership. Right now, the mayor has an initiative for the faith-based community to involve the faith-based community, and we're saying this is a perfect project for the faith-based community.
Mm.
But so far, we haven't gotten a lot of traction on that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you're keeping with it. You guys are committed.
Oh, yeah, we keep these things under review.
Uh-huh.
You know, under review.
Uh-huh. Interesting. So then is this one of the things that you talk about during one of your five membership meetings? You're like, okay, well, here's this project.
Typically, for example, the past meeting we went to in September, we focused on education. We went to the IB school. We learned how they're learning, what's happening there. That was sort of a show and tell. In the November meeting, we're going to look at crime in the city again because, we have gangs. We have those kinds of things. We're bringing in the police chief, and we're bringing in the chief detective and bringing in some people who are working in the city to look at, well, you know, what's happening with these gangs and who's dealing with what and what can we learn? Is this a potential area for us to get involved in?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know, but it's a great educational meeting for the members.
Okay.
Who all they do is read in the paper that the crime statistics have gone up, but why? What's behind it? What are people doing? What are the causes? What are the police looking as strategies that they might be able to implement? So they're really general educational kinds of meetings.
Okay. So the review of projects past and present are happening during the...
Well, they'll happen in the planning committee, and then we'll go to the membership and report. We will report. We'll also, as part of this city safety meeting in November, review the Gates project and say, okay, we've come this far. This is the result. This is what's happened. This is great. This is what we're looking at going forward.
Interesting. Well, Carolyn, is there anything else you would like to share with us about your Giving Circle?
I think, we need to continue. Our members are getting older. We need to look to the next generation. That's a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
How to involve younger women. That's important. We may have to change our structure. We may not be able to have luncheon meetings. We may have to have some evening things, which older people don't like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We may have to change that. I don't think we'll change our membership dues. But we're looking, we may even go to some corporations and talk with them about supporting for a year or two up-and-coming young professionals in their organization. So we're going to look at membership and how we can build a younger membership. That's one of the challenges that we have.
I think recruiting new members is a challenge for many giving circles. I want to thank you, Carolyn, for inspiring me about what is possible for the giving circles. It almost feels like you're closer to what I imagine a foundation does than what a giving circle does, and yet you have all those characteristics that I love about the giving circles. And so it's inspired me that, you know, there's more possible than I thought that there was. So thank you.
Well, I think there's an enormous synergy between the community foundation. If you have a community foundation in your community that you can work with, that you both have the same, you know, vision for this. We're very autonomous, very, very autonomous. The community foundation doesn't tell us what to do. We have our own staff support, but they give us tremendous administrative support where we're not burdened by any of that, because we don't want volunteers having to do that kind of work. And it gives people the integrity of knowing that our finances and things are handled properly. And so there's a great synergy there. I think it would be, and we learn a lot from them, a lot of resources they bring in for expertise. So I think it's a wonderful symbiotic kind of relationship if it works in your community.
And many communities have a local foundation.
Right. We also have an endowment with them, but it's not a big endowment. It's a small endowment, which we started a few years ago. We don't market it actively because we're not sure what we're endowing. What if the Women's Giving Circle isn't here 5 or 10 years from now? What are we endowing? We really, it's pass-through money. We take it in, we spend it out. So we have to look at that issue, too. Do our older members want to endow their annual dues so when they're no longer here or they're no longer active, they will continue to support us? But what will be the purpose of those funds? What will they be designated for? So we have that to think about.
Yeah, interesting. Well, again, Carolyn, thank you so much for your time today.
You're quite welcome.
I so appreciate
it. Okay, thank you.